glued from the stairs, and hurrying toward her daughter.
You just sit down. No, wait, let me get the med pack first.
Just get the suitcase,
Arinda said.
I'll get the med pack. We haven't got much time.
Elenia looked at Gudrey, turned quickly away.
We'll be ready,
she murmured. With a last look at her daughter, and no look at all at the dead man lying on her floor, she headed toward the closet and the carry bags. For a long moment, Arinda stared at Gudrey, wondering if she should feel something at what she'd done. But there was nothing. No guilt, no sorrow, not even any questions. Gudrey had threatened her parents. He'd gotten in her way. He'd paid the cost. Carefully, mindful of her shaky balance, she walked over to him. He still had all their special gear, after all, including the blasting caps, the comm trigger mechanism he'd set up, and whatever else he'd decided to bring along. Arinda might not need anything except the trigger, but then again, she might. Easing down onto her knees, she began to search the body.
Still no response from Price or Gudrey.
Yularen's voice came from the Chimera's bridge speaker.
Have you received anything?
Not since Agent Gudrey's transmission confirming the shield had been sabotaged, Pharaoh said. I assume you also have the necessary triggering code?
Yes, but I'd rather not use it until and unless we give them up as captured or dead.
Eli looked forward along the command walkway. Thrawn was standing by the forward viewport, his hands clasped behind his back, unmoving as he gazed at the planet below. The Admiral hadn't had much to say since his return from that clandestine visit to the Creek Path area. Eli had received a private communication from Yularen as Thrawn was returning to the ship, but the message hadn't said much except that questions about the Admiral's motives or strategies had been satisfactorily answered. Satisfactorily for the Colonel and ISB, maybe. Not so much for Eli. The fact that Thrawn had returned safely from Baton had relieved a lot of his concerns and stress. But the matter of the vulnerable cruisers still hung over the situation like a dark nebula. Especially since Eli had now proved, at least to his own satisfaction, that Admiral Kinshara had been right about the insurgents sneaking ships off Dinash. It hadn't been just a few ships, either. His estimates gleaned from the lists of spare parts and equipment shipments that Kinshara had retrieved from the captured base indicated there were no less than 30 mid-sized ships lurking somewhere nearby. All of them armed, all of them ready to pounce. Even for an Imperial Star Destroyer, a force of 30 armed ships wasn't to be taken lightly. In a situation like that, the Chimera needed its screening vessels close at hand. Only it didn't have them. The three cruisers were still sitting in their private little circles of isolation, far distant from the Chimera, each half cocooned with supply ships and repair barges. The two frigates were useless, having been sent by Thrawn to high observation duty in case Nightswan attempted to bring new weapons or personnel to his ground forces. Eli had reported his findings to Pharaoh, who had responded by emptying the Chimera's hangars and doubling the TIE fighter sentry screen around the planet. But the TIEs couldn't begin to cover everything, and the nearest warships that could respond to a call were over 30 hours away. By the time any aid could arrive, the battle would be over. Eli looked at the tactical, feeling his stomach knot up. Every ship of the 96th was vulnerable, but there was only one that truly mattered. If Nightswan's 30 lurking ships took out the Chimera, the whole system was open to them. If they didn't, they'd already lost. The Chimera wasn't just a target. It was the target.
Colonel Yularen, what is your troop status?
Thrawn called.
We don't have enough for an encirclement, Admiral. We can probably mount a solid punch through,
Yularen said.
I shall also mention that Gudry's report of an unknown number of gunships and skin fighters has the ground commanders a bit worried.
Once the shield is down, those flyers should not be a problem, Thrawn assured him. The Chimera can descend to effective firing distance within 3 minutes. More than enough time to deal with combat aircraft of that size.
We'll probably need that support, sir.
You shall have it, Thrawn said. Before all the troops are committed to battle, I want you to separate out a special duty squad for me.
Yes, sir. The mission?
Once the battle begins, I want them to make their way to the house of Governor Price's parents, Thrawn said. If she and Agent Gudry were compromised, they might have taken refuge there.
Understood, sir,
Yularen said.
Actually, we may not need to wait for the battle to get underway. If I'm reading the maps and images correctly, the house is far enough out from the center that we should be able to slip a squad in whenever we want.
That was also my conclusion, Thrawn said. But the situation on the ground is often more complex than it appears from orbit. How long will it take the squad to reach the house?
Give me 15 minutes to cut out a squad and prep them,
Yularen said.
Probably 30 more to slip them through the outer picket line and make their way inward. 45 minutes, an hour at most.
Good. Proceed.
Yes, sir.
And inform the commanders that they are to ready their troops, Thrawn added. If Governor Price and Agent Gudry are not at the Price home, and if we have not otherwise heard from them by then, we will assume their mission has failed and proceed accordingly.
Yes, sir,
Yularen said.
Captain Pharaoh?
Admiral?
Pharaoh replied, taking a step down the walkway.
Prepare the Chimera for combat, Thrawn said. I expect enemy forces to appear at any moment.
Yes, sir.
Pharaoh gestured to the crew pits.
Turbolaser, stand ready. Shields at standby power.
Shields at standby, sir, a voice acknowledged.
Turbolasers at...
A second voice began.
Incoming,
the sensor officer snapped.
Mid-sized ships, 10. Incoming on vector 110/80. Range 130 kilometers.
Eli turned to the tactical, his throat tightening. The 10 ships had jumped out of hyperspace 30 kilometers behind the Chirac and were heading straight toward it, accelerating to attack speed as they came, exactly as he'd feared.
Admiral, the Chirac!
Incoming!
The sensor officer cut him off.
11 more mid-sized on vector!
2 more groups incoming!
The secondary sensor officer corrected, her voice tight.
This one also 11 vessels. Admiral, they're targeting the cruisers.
I see them, Thrawn said, his voice like glacial ice.
Then do something!
The words screamed in Eli's brain. The 3 attack squadrons hadn't yet opened fire, but the respite would only last another few seconds. Another 20 kilometers, and their blaster cannons would cut through the defenseless cruisers like a fruit knife through a demi-husk. And once they'd destroyed the cruisers, there was nothing between them and the Chimera. Eli gazed at the display, his mind beating furiously at the situation, trying to find a way out. But there wasn't one. The Chimera was too deep in Baton's gravity well to jump to light speed. With the main drive still on standby, it would take nearly 10 minutes to climb to the necessary distance. There were no ground-based weapons that could assist, and Baton had no orbiting weapons platforms. All that remained was for the Star Destroyer to sit here and slug it out with the enemy ships. Was that Thrawn's plan? To make the attackers waste energy on the cruisers, possibly burning out some of their weapons in the process, then hope that the Chimera's armor and weapons would be enough to hold them off? Certainly the Admiral couldn't want the newcomers joining Nightswan and his insurgents on the ground. Was this his way of making sure they stayed in space and out of Nightswan's reach until the Creek Path battle was over? A motion caught Eli's eye, and he turned to see Thrawn walking back along the command walkway.
not hurrying, as if he were concerned about being too close to the viewport when the attack began, but with the measured tread of a man secure in his plan and his command. He paused beside the comms section of the crew pit, almost as if it were an afterthought.
"Signal the ground, commanders," he ordered. "The units on the west and north may open fire on the creek path insurgents, but they are to remain on the edges of the complex. Harassment fire only, until the shield is down or until I give further orders."
"Yes, sir."
Thrawn continued down the walkway, stopping before Eli and Pharaoh.
"Colonel Yularen's retrieval squad will benefit from diversionary fire elsewhere on the perimeter," he said.
"Yes, sir," Eli said, a small part of his mind feeling a twinge of chagrin that he'd been so preoccupied with the attacking ships that he hadn't put those pieces together.
"Sir, the ships?"
"Yes, Commander, the ships,"
Thrawn agreed, turning again to gaze out the viewport.
"Let us now discover how well I have read our opponent, and whether we're about to die,"
Eli muttered.
"Yes," Thrawn said, "and whether we are about to die."
Arinda and her parents were nearly to the insurgents' outer picket line when the complex to the north and west lit up with blaster fire.
"Telmor,"
Elenia murmured tensely, clutching at her husband's arm.
"I hear it,"
Telmor said, his voice grim.
"So it's happened. I hoped it wouldn't."
Arinda peered across the semi-lit area in front of them, trying to spot the Imperial troops out there. But they were still hunkered down and quiet, just as they'd been when she and Gudry headed inward earlier across their line. Had those squads missed the order to attack? Hardly. If they were still in place, it was because they'd been ordered to stay that way. In which case, the attacks in the distance were either a single-vector penetration or a diversion. She smiled tightly in the darkness. Of course. She had been ignoring the increasingly frequent calls on her comm, and the comm she'd taken from Gudry, not wanting to speak to Thrawn until she knew exactly what she was going to say. If that blaster fire was a diversion, it was so that a team could head in from some other direction to look for her. Her smile faded. The logical place to start a search would be her parents' house. If the team made it there and found Gudry's body, she might be able to talk her way out of it, but she might not. The fact that Gudry was dead without Arinda and her parents sporting so much as a blaster scorch would require a very tricky lie to explain.
"We need to go,"
Elenia said, her eyes still on the flickering lights in the distance.
"Arinda?"
"In a minute," Arinda said, looking around. A few meters to her right was a bulldozer-type machine,
probably set there by the insurgents so that this part of their picket line would have somewhere to fall back to when the shooting started.
"Stay here. I'll be right back."
Gudry's bag of tricks had included 6 comm-triggered blasting caps. She had a single one of them left. Affixing it beneath the bulldozer was the easy part. Keying Gudry's comm to detonate it was the trick. He'd run through the procedure with her on the transport, but it had been a perfunctory explanation from a man who'd clearly never expected her to have to use that knowledge. But after a few false starts, she got it keyed to the Signal 3 setting. Tucking the comm invisibly in her hand, she returned to her parents. They were still staring into the distance, as if by sheer willpower they would be able to see what was happening over there.
"Time to go," she murmured to them. "Let me do the talking."
She'd hoped the guards on the insurgent line would have all their attention directed outward, and that she and her parents would be able to slip through without being spotted. Once again, luck was against them.
"Halt," a quiet voice ordered from just ahead. "Where do you think you're going?"
"I need to get my parents out of here," Arinda said.
He was an older man, and he held his blaster like he knew what he was doing. A Clone Wars vet, maybe?
"Mother's not well,"
she added, as she started toward him, gripping Gudry's calm tighter in anticipation.
I need to get her to...
Let's see some IDs, the guard cut in. All of you.
This was it. So far, everyone they'd met had known her father, by name, if not by face. The odds were good that this man would, too. If he did, and if he started asking questions, or worse, if he called over a suspicious superior...
That won't be necessary,
Talmor said, stepping forward.
I'm Talmor...
Clenching her teeth, Orinda triggered the comm. The blasting caps had only limited power, and the explosion wasn't a huge one. But it was big enough, and loud enough, to draw everyone's attention to the bulldozer as it shuddered and rocked up briefly onto one side. As the guard gaped, Orinda stepped close to him, pressed the muzzle of her blaster against his chest, and fired. With the sound of the shot muffled by his body and further covered by the echoes from the explosion, she doubted anyone heard it. The guard certainly made no noise as he crumpled to the ground, his blaster clattering softly against the pavement. Orinda glanced around as she slid the blaster back inside her tunic, but saw no other pickets.
Orinda! What was... Orinda!
Her mother gasped.
What happened?
Probably caught a piece of shrapnel, Orinda said, taking her arm and pulling her along. Father, come on.
But we have to help him,
Alenia said. It's too late, Orinda said, tugging harder. Father, come on.
In a moment,
her father said, his voice strange. Orinda looked back over her shoulder, the movement sending another needle of pain through the back of her head. Talmor was standing over the freshly dead body, gazing down at it.
Father! She said in a loud whisper. Come on!
He looked at the body for another moment. Then he stirred and followed. And even in the faint light, Orinda could see the pain and revulsion in his eyes. She'd expected to be challenged at least once more before they reached the Imperial line. But the explosion had apparently sent the rest of the insurgents scrambling for cover while they figured out whether or not the attack was starting. Ahead, she could see a line of armored personnel carriers, their bulks dark against the lights of Paragosto City in the distance.
Halt! A brisk professional voice came from behind them.
Orinda looked back. Two men in black Navy trooper uniforms were striding toward them, blaster carbines held ready. She had no idea where they'd been hiding.
It's all right, she said quickly. I'm Orinda Price. I'm here on special assignment from Colonel Ularin.
Governor Orinda Price?
One of the troopers said, picking up his pace.
About time, Governor. The Colonel's been worried about you. You'd better give him a call. The team's already gone in.
What team?
Orinda asked.
The rescue team, heading to your parents' house, the trooper said. These them?
Yes, these are my parents,
Orinda confirmed, her heart beating faster. She'd hoped the team would wait until the battle started before going in. Maybe there was still time to stop them.
When did they leave?
I don't know, he said, giving her pass a quick look. Probably 20 minutes ago. You'll have to ask Colonel Ularin. Wasn't there supposed to be someone else with you?
We got separated,
Orinda said, clenching her teeth. 20 minutes... Depending on how stealthy they'd had to be on the inward trip, they could be within sight of the house by now. For that matter, they could already be inside.
I'll call him right away,
she said, glancing up. The stars, what could be seen of them through the hazy glow from the complex, showed the extra flicker that came from their light being sifted through an energy field. They were still under the edge of the creek path shield.
Where's your HQ?
She asked the troopers.
I need to get my parents to the city in some proper care.
HQ's over there, the man said, pointing to a larger version of the armored carrier. Major Talmadge, he'll arrange for transport.
Thank you.
Orinda beckoned to her parents.
Come on, let's find a place where you can sit this out.
They headed off, Orinda herding her parents in front of her.
Another few steps,
she told herself. Just another few steps.
The attacking ships, all three clusters, were within firing distance of the cruisers now. Eli clenched his teeth, wondering when they would begin the slaughter. The attackers continued on, reached point-blank range, and in smooth unison, their formation split apart, the ship swinging wide around the cruisers and support vessels. They cleared the obstacles, reformed their clusters, and continued inward toward the Chimera, without firing a single shot.
"What in the world?"
Pharaoh muttered.
"Night Swan learned from our attack on Scrim Island," Thrawn said calmly. "You see how he brought his ships in along the precise vectors where our fire would be blocked by the cruisers for the first leg of their attack?"
"Yes, sir," Pharaoh said. "Speaking of our fire..."
"Patience, Commander," Thrawn said. "Senior Lieutenant Lomar, inform the cruisers to break free of the barges immediately."
"You're sending them away now, sir?" Eli asked. "I thought you put them out there so they could jump before an enemy force could open fire."
"An incorrect assumption, Commander," Thrawn said calmly. "The attackers were never going to fire on them. Remember, we faced Night Swan, who insisted that the Dromedar's crew be held captive by pirates who wanted to kill them. He would never order his forces to fire on ships that could not fire back."
He gestured out the viewport, toward the Chirac.
"From a purely tactical point of view, having our undamaged ships and their crews behind his attackers and directly in our line of fire should also make us hesitate to open defensive fire."
"And that's why you're sending them away?" Pharaoh asked. "So we can finally fight back?"
"I'm not sending them away." Thrawn gave her a small smile. "Patience, Commander. Commander Vonto, report on the repair barges."
"They've pulled away from the Chirac," Eli said, studying the display. "Same for those around the Flenser and Tumnor."
He paused, peering at the group of repair structures. Was something emerging from behind them?
"Admiral, are those..."
"They are indeed, Commander," Thrawn said quietly. "TIE fighters, a full squadron from each location, brought into the Baton system, concealed inside the repair barges."
Eli exhaled a quiet breath,
the knot in his stomach suddenly loosening as he finally understood. "Waiting for the attacking ships to pass by."
"Yes," Thrawn said. "And now, thanks to Night Swan's strategy, they are perfectly positioned behind their targets."
Even as Eli watched, the TIEs curved smoothly around the barges and accelerated to attack speed, bearing down on the incoming insurgent vessels.
"Our TIEs are still on sentry screen," he said. "Where did these come from?"
"The Judicator," Thrawn said. "Admiral Dural was kind enough to loan them to us. Commander Pharaoh?"
"Sir?"
"Instruct our turbolasers to stand by to fire," Thrawn said. "Remind them not to overshoot against the TIEs."
"Yes, sir,"
Pharaoh said, a tight smile on her face.
"Fire control?"
"You heard the Admiral."
"Enemy incoming."
"Get ready to take them down."
It was time. Arinda's parents were safely inside Major Talmadge's HQ. Arinda was standing behind the vehicle. The steady light of the stars overhead showed they were finally out from under the Creek Path shield. And no one was watching. She couldn't stop Yularen's special squad. She couldn't prevent them from finding Gudry's body. All she could do was make sure they never reported it. Raising Gudry's calm, she keyed the remote. Not the Signal 1 remote, the one that would destroy the shield. The Signal 2 remote, the one that would set off Night Swan's cache of explosives. And suddenly, the world shattered
into a blaze of fire. Whatever Eli might think of Dural's abilities as a tactician, the Judicator starfighter pilots were among the best he'd ever seen. By the time the attackers reached the Chimera's close firing range, their numbers had been decreased by nearly two-thirds. It was the Chimera's turn now. The sky was filled with speeding ships and the green flashes of turbolaser blasts, when out of the corner of his eye, Eli saw the display centered on the Creek Path strong point light up with a brilliant burst of light. He spun to the display, his breath catching in his throat. For another fraction of a second, the smoke-swirled fire remained a near-perfect circle. And then, with a second flicker of light from the very center, the circle vanished, and the roiling mass of smoke and debris became a tangle-edged cloud as it blew farther outward. Someone in one of the crew pits swore. And abruptly, Eli understood. The explosives Gudry had rigged had detonated. But with the shield still in place, the massive blast had been contained and deflected inward and downward, demolishing not only the insurgent stronghold, but also the multitude of civilian homes clustered around the mine complex. What the hell had the insurgents just done? The Chimera's bridge had gone quiet. Thrawn was the first to break the silence.
Commander Pharaoh, signal Colonel Yularen and the ground commanders, he said, his voice calm but with an edge to it. The troopers are to enter the insurgent complex immediately, but not for combat, for search and rescue.
Understood, sir,
Pharaoh said, her voice under rigid control.
And those?
She added, pointing at the enemy ships swarming through the blaster cannon and turbo laser fire.
If any break off and run, let them go, Thrawn said. Their tales of what happened here today will hasten the demoralization of any other such groups.
And those that stay to fight?
Thrawn didn't hesitate.
Destroy them.
Did you see that?
Alenia asked yet again, her voice still shaking.
Did you see that?
I saw it, Mother,
Arinda confirmed as she half-led, half-dragged her parents to the waiting shuttle. Behind them, the whole Imperial line had come alive as men and vehicles moved into the blazing buildings and scattered debris that had been the Creek Path mining complex.
And no, I have no idea what happened.
Such a terrible thing,
Alenia murmured.
How could the Empire have done something like that?
You want to blame someone? Blame the insurgents,
Arinda countered, more harshly than she'd intended.
They're the ones who forced this confrontation.
Her mother fell silent. Her father hadn't spoken at all since they'd left Talmadge's vehicle. Arinda had to admit to a certain queasiness of her own. The shield-contained blast had been far more devastating than she'd expected. But it had served its purpose. The explosion, or the resulting firestorm, had surely obliterated her parents' home, and with it the evidence of Gudry's murder. In the end, that was all that mattered.
"Here's what you're going to do,"
she said, shaking both her parents a little to make sure she had their attention.
The pilot has instructions to take you to the Paragosto City landing field and a transport called the Duggenhai. Your passage to Lothal has already been paid. Once there, go to the governor's mansion. I'll call ahead and instruct them to put you in one of the guest suites. I'll join you as soon as I can, and we'll figure out then what you want to do. Clear?
But...
Alenia began.
No buts, Mother,
Arinda said.
Just go and wait, okay?
Alenia sighed.
All right.
Father, okay?
Talmor merely nodded.
Okay,
Arinda said, stopping at the foot of the shuttle's ramp and releasing their arms.
Get going. I'll be there as soon as I can.
She watched as they made their silent way aboard, both still moving like dreamers trapped in a horrible nightmare. The hatch closed, and the shuttle took off, heading for the distant lights of the city.
Your parents?
Arinda turned. Colonel Yularen was standing a few meters back, his eyes hard on her.
Yes,
she said.
I'm sending them back home. There's nothing here for them now.
Nothing much here for anyone, really,
he said.
I came to tell you that Admiral Thrawn requests our presence aboard the Chimera.
Which the Colonel could have told her via calm, Arinda knew. But if he'd done that, he wouldn't have been able to follow her and see what she was up to. Fine. Let him watch. Let him watch and wonder and suspect. She was Governor Price now, ruler of a vast array of mines, factories, and industries vital to the economic and military well-being of the Empire. As long as she continued to deliver what Coruscant wanted, she was untouchable.
Thank you, Colonel,
she said.
Do you have a shuttle ready?
I do, Your Excellency,
he said.
Shall we go?
Chapter 29.
All people have regrets. Warriors are no exceptions. One would hope it was possible to distinguish between events caused by one's carelessness or lack of ability and those caused by circumstances or forces beyond one's control. But in practice, there is no difference. All forms of regret sear equally deeply into the mind and soul. All forms leave scars of equal bitterness. And always, beneath the scar, lurks the thought and fear that there was something else that could have been done. Some action or inaction that would have changed things for the better. Such questions can sometimes be learned from. All too often, they merely add to the scar tissue. A warrior must learn to set those regrets aside as best he can, knowing full well that they will never be very far away.
It was, by anyone's standards, a slaughter,
Yularen said.
His voice is under control, but holds deep regret and the echo of dark memories.
I saw some horrendous things during the Clone Wars. This ranks right up there with the worst of them.
You have the numbers?
Thrawn asked.
Yes, sir,
Yularen said, keying his datapad.
As you can see, the number of civilian deaths far exceeded the number of insurgents killed.
How do we know which were which?
Governor Price asked.
Her voice held scorn and caution, but no sympathy. The muscles of her arms and shoulders are tight beneath her tunic.
This was a citizen uprising, after all.
We can assume the people inside the central cordon and the ones holding weapons on the sentry lines were insurgents,
Yularen said.
His tone is polite, but holds barely concealed contempt.
The people in their houses when the firestorm blew them apart probably weren't.
There is no need for vehemence, Colonel,
Price said.
Her voice holds calmness now, with the scorn fading. Her hands resting on the conference table show rigid self-control.
You do not know how the explosives came to be detonated before the shield generator?
Thrawn asked.
I'll tell you what I told Colonel Yularen,
Price said.
I went to my parents' house to get them ready to leave. We waited there for Agent Gudry. He didn't return by the time we'd agreed on, so we left.
I can only assume he was trapped or disabled by the insurgents, and rather than allow them to take him alive, triggered the caps.
Those on the explosives cash first?
Yularen asked.
His voice held suspicion, His eyes are fixed unblinkingly on Price.
Or he triggered both at once, Price said.
Her voice holds impatience and challenge. Her hands begin to move, then become motionless again as she regains control.
Or he tried the generator first and it failed. We won't know the details until a full investigation is made.
Commander Vantos stirred in his chair, also frustrated and suspicious. But he said nothing.
The Senator's already ordered an inquiry, Ilarin said. But I doubt they'll find anything useful. The intersection of the complex where the explosions took place was reduced pretty much to dust.
Again, I don't have much sympathy for the insurgents, Price said. But I do mourn the loss of Agent Goodry. He was a good agent, and a loyal protector.
I trust you also mourn the troopers who died in the blast, Ilarin said, including those who had been sent to rescue you.
A mission I was unaware of, Price said.
Her voice holds coolness. The tightness is fading from her muscles.
As I told you earlier, I didn't want to use my comm more than absolutely necessary.
Have we information as to the insurgents' ability to tap into such communications? Thrawn asked.
We don't know that they could, sir, Vanto said. But it is theoretically possible.
And someone like Nightswan would certainly have wanted to keep tabs on who was communicating from inside a stronghold if he'd had the capability.
Yes, Thrawn said.
Your report, Colonel, said his death was confirmed?
Yes, sir, Ilarin said. His body was found and identified in one of the outer areas, where the damage was less severe. He was probably checking on the perimeter.
He hesitated.
Possibly preparing to stand alongside the defenders there.
Yes, Thrawn said. And so it was over.
The path had ended. The pattern was broken. The song of the Night Swan was silenced. The galaxy would be the worse for its loss.
Still, the Emperor is pleased with the outcome, Price said.
Her voice holds pride and satisfaction as she looks at Thrawn.
Her head is held high.
Very pleased indeed.
Is he? Thrawn said.
Price's eyes slip away from his gaze.
Her throat muscles tighten, her expression holding caution and discomfort.
He is, she said. I expect he'll find a tangible way to show his thanks.
There was a signal from the conference room intercom.
Yes, Thrawn asked.
A message from Coruscant, Admiral,
Feyre reported.
Her voice holds controlled excitement.
The Emperor requests your presence at the Imperial Palace at your earliest convenience.
Thank you, Commander, Thrawn said. Transmit my acknowledgement and inform Coruscant that we will travel there as soon as the Baton matter has been finalized.
Yes, sir.
The intercom clicked off.
You don't want to keep the Emperor waiting, Admiral,
Price warned.
Agreed, Ilarin said. With respect, sir, we can handle things from groundside.
And the cruisers can follow on as soon as their repairs are complete, sir, Vanto added. They shouldn't be more than a couple of days behind us. If you'd like, we can leave the frigates here with them so that they can all convoy together.
An excellent thought, Thrawn said. Very well.
Inform Commander Feyre to make ready. The Chimera will leave Baton in 3 hours, with the rest of the task force following as able.
Colonel Ilarin, if during the next 3 hours you find my attention here is further needed, please inform me so that I may delay our departure.
Yes, sir.
Ilarin, Vanto, and Price stand up from the table.
Governor Price, a word with you in private, if I may, Thrawn said.
Vanto and Ilarin exchanged glances, but they collected their data cards and left the conference room without further comment.
A question, Admiral?
Price asked when the others were gone.
She remained standing by her chair,
Her body stands holding no indication that she is preparing to sit down again.
A statement, Governor,
Thrawn corrected.
Price shakes her head. Her cheek and throat muscles show fresh tension, but her back is stiff and straight, and her head is held high with defiant confidence.
No.
Excuse me.
That's not how you bring an accusation against a powerful member of the Imperial government, she said. For all your tactical skill, Admiral, you still don't know the first thing about dealing with politicians.
Do I not?
You do not, Price said.
Her voice holds confidence.
Your entire career has been one of military triumphs and political bumps. And every one of those bumps has required someone with political skill to get you out of it.
She leans forward and sets her hands palms down on the table in front of her.
Let's lay out our cards. Or rather, I'll lay out my cards, since you're not the card-playing sort. You clearly suspect me of knowing more than I've said about what happened on Baton. Fine. Suspect me all you want. But don't lose track of the fact that you need me.
In what way?
To smooth out your future political bumps, she said. And trust me, there will be more bumps. You're a successful admiral. That makes you a target for people who want to siphon off some of your power for themselves.
People such as you. She smiled again. Her expression holds irony. Her body stance holds a slightly grudging respect.
At least you've learned some political lessons. But no, I don't want to take your power away. I merely want to direct it along a line that will do us both the most good.
Such as?
The fact is that I have something of an insurgent situation on Lothal, she said.
Her voice holds reluctance. Her facial heat increases. Her body stance holds resentment and anger, but directed elsewhere.
I wanted to make my world the Outer Rim's best and finest source of high-grade metals, as well as the premier manufacturing and military center for the sector. In the process, I may have pushed the locals a bit too hard. Regardless of the cause, we have a problem. And Admiral Constantine has been less than effective in dealing with it.
You've spoken to the High Command.
The High Command has a lot of hot spots to deal with right now.
Her voice holds impatience and scorn.
With more popping up every day. I've had some discussions with Grand Moff Tarkin, and he isn't any happier about the situation than I am. He's especially not happy that our local rebels are starting to take their brand of annoyance to other places in the region. He's made it clear that I need to find a solution.
Have you?
Yes, she said. You.
And what would my benefit be?
I already detailed one of those benefits, Price said. If you don't think my political guidance of enough value, then consider the gain to your prestige from another victory or two. That's all Coruscant values, you know. Results.
She cocks her head to the side.
My sources tell me that Fleet Admiral Sartin of the 7th Fleet is going to be replaced soon. Baton is just the kind of victory that could put you in line for that command.
I am content with the 96th Task Force.
You'd be more content with the 7th Fleet, Price retorted.
She pauses, her expression and body stance showing her effort to regain control.
One last card. A card I know you care about. The 7th Fleet carries a lot of firepower. It's sent to major conflicts where there are powerful and desperate enemies. If you don't command it, someone else will. Do you think there's anyone else in the Imperial Navy who cares as much as you do about limiting casualties?
You make interesting points, Thrawn said. I will consider your proposal.
Do that,
Her body stance holds complete confidence. Her expression holds quiet triumph.
In the meantime, go have your meeting with the Emperor. Smile and thank him for whatever accolades or trinkets he heaps on you.
She smiles, her expression holding cynicism.
Who knows? He might even make you a Grand Admiral. The point is, get through it, and we'll see each other again soon.
We may indeed, Thrawn said. Farewell, Governor. Safe journey.
She had been gone for 18 minutes when Vanto returned to the conference room.
Governor Price just left, he reported, eyeing Thrawn closely. What did she say?
She offered herself as my advisor on political matters.
You could definitely use someone like that,
Vanto said doubtfully.
Not sure she's the right one for the job, though. What did she say about Creek Path?
She didn't admit to playing any part in the destruction, Thrawn said. But I believe she bears at least some of the blame.
But you have no proof?
None. Figured as much, Vanto said, his voice grim. And from what Yularen said, we're not likely to get any. So she gets away with it.
Perhaps,
Thrawn said.
Perhaps not. I've noted there is often a symmetry to such things.
We can hope, Vanto said.
So, to Coruscant?
To Coruscant,
Thrawn said.
I know you're not going to like accepting the credit for the action down there,
Vanto said.
But try to smile and act grateful anyway.
He frowned.
What are you smiling about?
Governor Price had much the same advice.
Oh,
Vanto shrugged.
Well, it's still a good idea.
With your permission, I'd like to go see if there's any final data from Groundside before we leave.
Please do, Thrawn said. Remember, too, that others have served the Empire well. I trust the Emperor will have enough honors to award to all.
I wouldn't hold my breath, Vanto said. Doesn't matter. I'm quite content to be your aide, Admiral. It's where I'm supposed to be.
Perhaps, Thrawn said. Perhaps not.
The throne room was, as Thrawn remembered it, though he saw it now with different eyes. The new uniform he'd been given was white, with gold shoulder bars and silver collar insignia, completely unlike anything else in the Imperial Navy. The rank insignia plaque the Emperor held in his gnarled hand was equally impressive. 12 tiles in blue, red, and gold. The Emperor's face was as Thrawn had never seen it.
His expression owed satisfaction, with hints of both amusement and malice.
Congratulations, Grand Admiral,
he said, as he held out the insignia plaque.
An excellent day for you. An excellent day for my empire.
The amusement grows.
Though I fear many will not see it that way.
I will endeavor to set their hearts and minds at ease,
Thrawn said.
But I must first calm my own heart and mind.
The smile leaves the Emperor's face. Some of the satisfaction fades, replaced by displeasure.
Must you now?
He said.
Very well. Speak your mind, Grand Admiral.
Tell me about the Death Star. The amusement vanishes. The malice grows.
When and how did you hear of that project?
I learned the name from unguarded dispatches, Thrawn said. I deduced the size and power from resource allocations. I now wish to learn from you its purpose.
The amusement reappears, mixed now with understanding and triumph.
Ah,
he said, lowering his hand to his side.
Your thoughts are laid bare, Mithron Yurodo. You fear that once I have dealt with the rebels within my borders, I will turn my unstoppable weapon against your Chiss. Is that your concern?
That is part of it, Thrawn said. I would certainly not wish to see my aid to you and your empire subverted into conquest or destruction. But I would also warn against diverting too many of the Empire's resources from a flexible navy of capital ships and starfighters to massive projects that can bring the Imperial presence to only one system at a time.
Allow me to allay your fears, the Emperor said. I have no designs against your people. Indeed, I have noted that despite your assistance in mapping the unknown region hyperspace routes, you have kept the location of Chiss worlds and bases secret. That is acceptable. I don't begrudge you the defense of your people. As to Imperial resources...
He smiles again, the triumph growing and turning strangely brittle.
There will soon be no need to spread the Imperial presence across the galaxy. Once the Death Star is fully operational, its very existence will suppress all opposition. And so...
He raises his arm, again holding out the rank plaque.
This time, Thrawn took it.
Good, the Emperor said.
His smile again holds satisfaction. The malice fades, but never entirely disappears.
At the side of the throne room, a door slid open, and a tall, black-clad figure appeared, a long black cloak swirling behind him.
Ah, Lord Vader,
the Emperor called a greeting.
He beckons to the figure. His body stance holds a sense of mastery and domination.
Come, join us. I don't believe you have met Darth Vader, Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Vader approaches, his pace measured but confident. His face is hidden, his muscle movements muted and unreadable beneath his armored clothing. But his stance holds power and authority. It also holds confidence. More than anything else, it holds confidence.
You are correct, Your Excellency, Thrawn said. I greet you, Lord Vader.
Grand Admiral,
Vader said, inclining his helmeted head.
His voice is deep and partially mechanical. It too holds power and confidence.
I've heard a great deal about you, Thrawn said.
I am pleased we have finally met.
Yes,
Vader said.
As am I.
Epilogue.
It is said that one should keep one's allies within view, and one's enemies within reach. A valid statement.
One must be able to reason allies' strengths so as to determine how best to use him.
One must similarly be able to read an enemy's weaknesses so as to determine how best to defeat him. But what of friends? There is no accepted answer. Perhaps because true friendship is so exceedingly rare. But I have formulated my own. A friend need not be kept either within sight or within reach. A friend must be allowed the freedom to find and follow his own path. If one is fortunate, those paths will for a time join. But if the paths separate, it is comforting to know that a friend still graces the universe with his skills and his viewpoint and his presence. For if one is remembered by a friend, one is never truly gone.
Eli read the entry a second time. Then, with a sigh, he shut down his datapad. He still didn't know why Thrawn had left him his journal. Perhaps he'd seen it simply as history. Perhaps he'd seen it as one final opportunity for training and instruction. Or perhaps the reason was encompassed somehow in that final entry. Distantly, Eli wondered if there had been any more to the journal. And if so, if he would ever find the other entries. He doubted it. But it didn't really matter. The galaxy had Thrawn's legacy and his accomplishments. Those who could learn from that legacy had presumably already done so. Those who couldn't, never would. Eli hoped he was part of the first group. Setting aside the datapad, he gazed again at the pattern of numbers flowing across his display. For most people he knew, numbers were next to meaningless. For Eli, by life and by training a supply specialist, they were like music. Whether they formed themselves into inventory lists, targeting calculations, or hyperspace course and position data, numbers were at the heart of everything that made the universe function. They spoke to a grand symphony of people, humans and non-humans alike, of worlds and trade routes, of the lifeblood of good and evil alike. Perhaps that was why he and Thrawn had worked so well together. Eli had his numbers, Thrawn had his art, and neither skill could be fully understood by anyone else.
He smiled at the thought, and at his own conceit. No, he had never fully understood Thrawn.
He doubted anyone ever had. But that was Eli's past. This was Eli's present. His present, and hopefully his future. The flowing course numbers reached their end, and Eli threw the hyperdrive levers. The view through the cockpit canopy changed from mottled sky to star lines to the cold beauty of unfamiliar stars. And in the center of the grandeur, a single ship. A large ship, shimmering with muted running lights, bristling with weaponry, crewed by men and women whom Eli had never met. He had arrived. The comm screen lit up with a face, regal and blue-skinned, with glowing red eyes.
Her blue-black hair was tied in a tight knot at the back of her head, her collar insignia those of an admiral.
"I am Admiral Aralani of the Chiss Defense Fleet,"
she said in a clear voice, her Sibisti heavily accented.
"Are you he?"
"I am he." Eli took a deep breath. "I am Eli Vanto. I bring greetings to you from Mithron Yerodo. He believes I can be of some use to the Chiss Ascendancy."
"Welcome, Eli Vanto,"
Aralani said, inclining her head in greeting.
"Let us learn together, if he was correct."
This is Mark Thompson. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars: Thrawn by Timothy Zahn. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Aaron Blank. Star Wars: Thrawn is a production of Lucasfilm Limited and registered or trademarked where indicated. Copyright 2017. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production, copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Penguin Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.